Miller Lite, the official beer partner of your Philadelphia Phillies, is proud to serve as presenting sponsor of WIP's High Hopes Pod. So whether you're listening to the game, catching up on the latest High Hopes Pod, or at the ballpark, remember, it tastes like Miller time, Phillies fans. Celebrate responsibly. This is the High Hopes Podcast.
High Hopes!
On the Odyssey app and Sports Radio 94 WIP.
The crowd was singing high.
Yo ho ho! It is another edition of the High Hopes Podcast, sponsored by Miller Lite, official partner of the Philadelphia Phillies. Tastes like Miller time, Philadelphia. Celebrate responsibly, Jack. I know that a baseball series happened this past weekend in Milwaukee. I know we're going to talk about it. I know that one of the great pitching performances of all time against us, all that stuff. We're going to get into that. But like, can we just focus on starting with June 20th? And everyone should come hang out with us in Reading for our night at the Reading Phils. It's going to be so much fun. Families come. It's a great ballpark. It's a super fun time. We're going. Have fun with us. It's going to be awesome. We got a link to tickets posted on Jack's Twitter. I'll put it up on my Twitter. But Saturday night, we are going to have a freaking blast in Reading. Please come hang out with us.
Father's Day weekend. It's a good way to
buddy.
Take your dads to the Reading game. Or
that's right. Emily's dad is coming, we think, you nice. Know, to coming out with Zoe and all. That'd be great.
And just looked at the little forecast. 75 and sunny.
I was like, please don't rain. Please don't rain. Please don't rain. So, hell yeah.
75 and sunny sounds like a good night at baseball town. Baseball town. Now, Reading's the best. And hopefully Nori's back. And I don't think Gage Wood's pitching. But there's a lot of good things still happening with the Reading fighting Phils, including Brian Rincon. So, it'll be a great time. And it won't rain. And we'll throw the first pitch, and we'll see who bounces it and who doesn't bounce it. I haven't picked up a baseball
since that pitch, I haven't picked one up. So, yeah.
Yeah. The last time I threw it was to the camera. And
you pushed it.
I had 30 pitches, and I had probably three more left before. And like every time I try to cut something now with a knife, I think I feel my tendon in my elbow. So I don't know if that's a good sign or not.
But probably not.
Yeah. Hey, little Tommy for some content.
Little on TJ, the, baby. Let's go.
Yeah, dude. Jack rehabs from Tommy John would be it.
That's a hell of a video series I think we could put out, you know.
Well, if no baseball's next year, I mean, listen. True. I'll rehab as long as it takes for baseball to come back from Tommy John. I think that sounds like good content, 100%. So yeah, the link's on my Twitter. If you cannot get the link on Twitter, just email thehighhopespod@gmail.com. I'll shoot you the link back and we'll go from there. So I know not everyone's on Twitter, of course, but if you need the link, just email us at thehighhopespod@gmail.com.
Yeah, and obviously coming out, it's going to be awesome. If you can't get out to Reading, we do have an event June 24th at Garage Rittenhouse in Philly, a makeup for the one we were going to do before. So come hang out with that, too. If you're in the city, that's going to be awesome. We'll talk more about that as the week goes on. But June 20th, this weekend, coming.
And it's in the pod description. It's Tucker. Just let me know.
So look at this. See, that Tucker's the best. He's the best.
Just peddling tickets.
That's right. He's the best. All right, let's talk about not the best. Weekend for it wasn't a disaster. Like they won 1-3. The two losses were just particularly ugly, and that the win they held on for dear life. But I want to get to Trey. I want to get to what Madeline said. I want to get to a lot of this stuff. But let's just start because I mean you argue, and despite it being against us, I know you had a part of you just had to be like, I can't believe I'm watching what Mizrowski is doing right now. It is obviously statistically literally one of the great starts of all time. You had a funny text to me too about like you're like back in the day when hitters could actually hit. Clemens did this twice. Yeah. Take me through your Mizrowski experience.
A miserable Mizrowski experience. Yeah, right? No, he was that was sick.
And it was unreal.
And this the one thing I hate that pitchers do is after they shove, they say after the game, yeah, I didn't really have it in the first three innings.
Oh,
it's
I
like,
know.
Would
it's
you
like, come
shut
on, dude.
Up? Yeah, you threw like four balls in the first three
15
innings.
Strikeouts on 95 pitches. That's like almost statistically impossible.
Yeah, the first inning you went 104, 104, 104 to strike out the side. I think you felt pretty good.
Yeah.
Seems like he was, it seems as if he was pitching a little ticked off because of how the, because of how the Phillies last year called him making the All-Star game basically Savannah Bananas-ish. And I think he kind of took that a little personally, even though they were talking about not him. They were talking about
Sanchez and the whole thing,
the game and things like that. So, but yeah, I mean, it. I went into it expecting them to get absolutely
dominated. We did. We talked about it on the pod. We were like, "This is they're going to get smoked on. Don't even worry about this one."
And it was even worse than I thought.
It was worse.
So I the one aspect or part of this team that I think is particularly dreadful. On Sundays, they're dreadful. I think they're 4-12 on the year, maybe 4-13 now.
Is that really? Because I anecdotally, I agreed. I was like, as you said it, I'm like, yeah, it does feel like there's 4-13, 4-12. That's I didn't realize it was that bad. That's nuts.
Man, they suck on Sundays.
Thank God we haven't been doing Sunday pods, man.
Oh, I know. Well, dude, if we recorded a pod, I was so mad yesterday.
Oh, I can only imagine.
It was one of those days where it was hot, but it wasn't like unbearably hot. And it's like I'm sitting inside watching them just get just dominated by Kyle Harrison. And I'm like, what am I doing? Go outside. We got an inflatable pool.
Hang with
like,
my kids. Do something outside. Productive. Yeah.
No. But I'm just spewing about this freaking. Anyway, but one area that they are particularly annoying and awful at is the first game on the road after a day off in that city. I feel like in that particular scenario, they clearly took the foot off the gas on that off day, which is fine. You're supposed to reset. I get it. But they just have such a hard time ramping back up. So the combination of an off day Thursday where they're I know Keller was out golfing because Whit Merrifield did a video of that, which, again, is fine. I understand it. It's just then to go get just dominated by Mizra and not even really show up. I mean, they didn't really show up. Really, that's what
they got one hit and 15 strikeouts and a double play. He faced the minimum. He was a Kyle Schwarber single away from a perfect game with 15 strikeouts. Jack, come on.
And it was the first pitch Schwarber hit, too. So he was really just trying to jump on a fastball.
Yes.
But like Friday was annoying, but it was like I could explain it away. Mizrowski's unbelievable and he's gonna win the Cy Young. I mean, he's gonna probably start the All-Star game, which is a bummer being in Philly. We'll see, but it seems like it's trending that way, especially with the narratives. But like yesterday, there's two games a series where it felt like they didn't even get off the bus. And I get it's the end of a road trip, but that's a show me series against the Brewers.
It's a big series against a big team, you know, like a team that you could face in the playoffs. One of the few teams that is definitively been better than you this year in the National League. Like it's a big one.
And there's a couple things that Donnie's got to tighten up real quick. I thought they were sloppy. I thought the defense really, there's some lapses this weekend. Now maybe it was just Trey and it's clear that to me, at least that, at the plate is now affecting him in the field because he was horrendous defensively this series. But I did not appreciate the way they showed up and played yesterday at all. I thought it was lackadaisical. It didn't look like they were playing inspired baseball. And to not really like that Brewers team seems to play with a lot of infectious energy. And you watch them and the energy that they have, and then you see this team and the kind of malaise and going through the motions. I thought they went through the motions yesterday. I thought they went through the motions on Friday. And that was incredibly disappointing heading into the series.
Yeah, I don't always pay too much attention to these types of stats, especially because they are pretty small sample sizes. But the Phillies are 3-9 against the NL division leaders, other than, you know, the Braves and the Brewers and the Dodgers. And that feels right. Mm-hmm. And it also feels like, look, we know the playoffs get hot, but that feels representative of these teams. Like, I would pick the Braves, the Dodgers, or the Brewers to beat us in a playoff series, and I wouldn't think hard about it. You know, like, those teams are better now. And that's where the Phillies have to get to, and that was a series where, again, you're not going to be better than the Brewers because you beat them in a series, but it was a chance to go up against a real team that you're competing with for the National League. And to your point, it's one thing if you lose. It's another thing if you don't show up for two of three games. Like, that's upsetting as a fan because it wasn't just another series. It's a series where you felt like you wanted to see your team play against the best. So it was a disappointing series despite not being a disaster and like, they didn't get swept or, you know, but it does feel like I was right not to think this team is quite at the top of the league with those other teams yet because they haven't proven it.
Well, it was annoying too. Like, you have Sanchez versus Kyle Harrison, and Kyle Harrison is one of my babies.
He's really good. He's a good pitcher.
He's on the Fritz list.
He is a good pitcher.
But it was just annoying that, like, what they did against Sanchez, and they were able to score four off him, and our guys kind of just laid down. And outside of the Skeens game and Eovaldi on opening day, even though Eovaldi has not been the same Eovaldi, like Father Time might finally be catching up to Nathan Eovaldi, but I'd still take him at the deadline if the Texas Rangers fall out.
Yeah, anyway. Big game. I'll still okay with Nate Eovaldi taking the hill for me. You know,
nasty Nate. But it's every time there's a pitcher with a pulse that's actually a guy, it feels like they just don't show up. They accept their fate. And I hate, it's like, you can tell early too, where they just like, I think Harper is the one.
You
can tell early. He's just not into it. Like, he doesn't want to face Kyle Harrison today. And I feel like that just trickles down the entire team of like, well, you know, I guess we're not going to hit him today. And it's the pitchers with the pulse, the guys that are actually something, a guy with an ERA. Again, the Phillies trick, the Phillies sweet spot. If the pitcher we've never heard of, he's going to shove. Like Ryan Gusto tonight.
Totally.
He's got a 5.69 ERA. Get ready for at least five innings of two-run ball, max. And then too good, they just don't show up. It's the sweet spot of the of not too good, a guy you've heard of, that they will absolutely take the task. But the getting shut down by Kyle Harrison, who again is really freaking good, but not even really being competitive, was the thing that, I don't know. I mean, it makes sense that they're 3-9 against division leaders. I mean,
yeah, it does, right? That jives. That feels right. It's like, yeah, anecdotally, I feel like that's how the season has played out. And to your point, Jack, like, you're going to face good pitchers in the playoffs, not just good pitchers, good pitchers. As focused and locked in as they're going to be, every pitch matters and all that stuff. And this team, again, and it's the playoffs, and you can play differently, but when they have so consistently in the regular season struggled to, Jack, to your point, even to get up for these games, even to like fight against these pitchers, like, that's lived in. That's the kind of thing where when you get to the playoffs, why should I assume that they're going to fight then and do they have anything to stand on with experience with reps in the season where they did it against pitchers? You know, it is a concern. Again, it's we're still in, you know, early June and all that, or mid June, but that's a concerning thing with the team. Cause obviously the lineup is a concerning and the, you know, playoff history and all that, but this specific thing of struggling against great pitchers and giving up, it seems like, against great pitchers in the game, like, that is a harbinger for bad things moving forward.
Now, it was a 3-3 road trip. We always sign up for that. There's saying a 3-3 road trip, and then there's experiencing a 3-3 road trip. Always easy to say.
Much easier to say.
But then living it is the one. And then there's the whole trade situation.
Yeah, so let's get to it, because I do think that is, and it did seem like it came to a head over the weekend.
Yeah.
Obviously, with the comments, both from Trey himself, who, you know, we've heard him like this before, where he just sounds like he doesn't even know what to do. Like, he is trying, he's doing the cage, all this stuff, but he just doesn't have answers. And Mattingly looked pretty forthcoming, you know, talked about the potential to bench him for a few games, talked about the potential move him down in the lineup. Also was pretty frank about, like, you know, when asked about if you could bench him, move him down, he's like, yeah, but, like, you know, we don't, it's not like we have a ton to fill in when he's not playing or if he's moved the lineup and stuff. So what did you make of Mattingly's comments, Trey's comments the weekend, and kind of what you think they're going to do moving forward because of it?
Well, my first thought is, at least there's only 7 years left.
I know, dude. It's the worst contract in the city, which is crazy because we got some bad ones. But when you take in the length and the amount of money, it's the worst contract in the city.
It's unbelievable. In my head, I know the stats, like what his numbers are, but I try to avoid looking at them because they're just
upsetting.
So for comparison's sake, at this time in 2023, when everyone was like, he's horrible, 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 he was hitting .252 with a .700 OPS. He is now .598, .219, .269.
That's pretty crazy. I knew that his numbers were better before the ovation and obviously after than now. I didn't realize it was that. I mean, that's almost, you know, we're getting like 170 points of OPS difference. Like, that's massive. 180 points. That's nuts.
Would die, frankly, for those numbers right now from Trey. So I'm okay with playing him through it. It's just he can't be batting two anymore. It's got to be Bohm tonight. Like make the switch tonight. It seems like this whole thing is coming to a head.
Yeah.
I mean, just a horrendous weekend. I mean, when you're looking, I think there was two times this weekend he struck out on fastballs right down the middle. And I would
also talked about like the ones where he didn't like doesn't feel comfortable enough to challenge even, which we had talked about how he's had those misses. Like he is, but that says something because he was challenging in big spots earlier in the season, like we talked about. Like the fact that he is so messed up that he's like, I can't even challenge a ball strike call, like shows just how lost he is right now.
Yeah. Well, how about this? How about you think a little bit before you go up there? And if you see spin going to the outside corner, don't swing. Like, how about one pitch, one spot? Let's just go back to the basics. If you want to swing first pitch, one pitch, one spot. You got three strikes, kid. Like, you don't have to be in such a rush to make an out. So, one pitch, one spot. Let's get this back to basics. But he's like in between fastball and off speed. He's late on fastballs, early on breaking balls, which is like the worst spot to be in as a hitter. If they want to sit him for a couple days, I'm fine with it. Like, give him a reset, let Sosa play. Cool. But the more important one is he cannot be batting two. He just can't. Harper's not going to bat two. So it's going to go Schwarber, Bohm, Marsh. Schwarber, Bohm, Harper, Marsh. And then Turner, if you want to bat him fifth. Just to give him not as important a spot in the lineup, but also down a little bit and maybe just take some of the weight off of his shoulders.
But, and because they don't, it's not like they have a ton of guys who are hitting. Like Sosa's not hitting. Like it's not like you can like. There's an obvious he'll be much better than Trey guy. You know they've been better, but you know what I mean.
And the most concerning part is now it's affecting him in the field. I mean, he was horrendous this weekend defensively. You know, cost Painter. It was all weekend. Just balls up the middle, getting through. And at least you could say when he's gone through his offensive slumps that it hasn't really affected them in the field. Well, now it is. So he is clearly lost, clearly needs some kind of reset. I would move him down, give him a couple of days, but we've finally reached the breaking point, it seems like, on the Trey situation, because that was an awful weekend of baseball.
Yeah. And I'm with you. I think you have to do both things. Honestly, I would move him down the line, but I would give him a couple of days off. I know he's talked about, you know, he always wants to be in the cage, always wants to be going. Like, I think sometimes you just have to tell someone like, hey man, get away. Huh? Like, honestly, like not only are we giving you 2 days off, one of them, you're not even coming to the ballpark, like stay home or whatever. I know that, you know, whatever, you know, like maybe if you don't stay home, like you're sitting on this bench, don't even think about it. You're not getting in, you're not pinch hitting, like take a day. Take a couple days because look, it worked for Bohm and it doesn't work for everyone, but that was a really important reset for Bohm. Like he has been different since those 2 days off. I think they have to put him down the lineup no matter what immediately, but I would do both, Jack. I would give him a couple days off. And then when he comes back, I put him in like the 7-0 or something.
Isn't it refreshing that Mattingly is honest about it?
Yeah. I was pretty shocked at how honest he was with his comments about it.
Yeah. It's good. It's good. Cause it has the other way wasn't working. So try it this way. And I always go back to this when we talk about struggling players. And I think this was one of Thompson's like flaws in a way, is not only with like numbers, righty lefty, like being too regimented.
Rigid,
with that.
Yeah.
Being too rigid. But, you know, one of the things that I think analytics has brought and that is hurt from an aspect like this is everything is about like winning the game, like win probability. And I know the numbers would say that losing Trey like doesn't actually affect if you're going to win or lose a ball game. But in a manager's head, they're like, I can't sit one of my best players because it's going to cost me a win. But it could also help get the player back. So like the old example I always think of and use, I mean, Charlie sat Jimmy for an entire series up in or down in Tampa, or after he made an error in Tampa and just needed to get him off his feet. And again, it happened with Bohm. It might have to happen with Trey. It's an old school thing with baseball, but it can work and everything else hasn't worked. So letting him play through it, letting him swing 1,000 times in the cages hasn't worked at all. So get him off his feet for a couple days, and maybe, just maybe, you can get the a version of Trey Turner that is closer to the usual version of Trey,
or at least better, right?
Whatever, you know, this is.
It's a great point. Like, we talk about this all the time, but I think, you know, I don't think it's a bold statement, but baseball, the most mental game of all the games, the game where you have to, you know, be so okay with failure, be so used to failure, you know, that the 3 out of 10 and you're, you know, all-star. So I think that it's so much harder when these guys get in these mental spirals or these holes where they're struggling and they don't know what's wrong and they can't figure it out, where I think more so than in any other sport, getting them away from it does matter. Like, it's not going to always work, obviously, but I do think that you have to, look, we know, I think in any job, even if we have jobs we love, like after a long run with no days off and you're talking about the same things or whatever, like, a day off, I come back, I'm like, I can't wait to talk. I'm so refreshed. This is exciting. And obviously it's a different thing than playing baseball, but I do think there is something to a mental reset, a refreshing type thing when you're going through something. And it may seem that Trey, with the way he is, with the intensity and the cage stuff and all that, that he might not be able to turn it off. And I hope he can. But I do think they should at least try, because something has to happen for him from a mental confidence perspective.
Well, because they're not going anywhere without him. I mean, he's just...
He's super important. Crazy, especially with Garcia going down. Like, we'll get to that. He is, like, they do not have right-handed options, and certainly the money you're paying him and what he's done in the past, like, as sad as it is, like, Trey Turner turning it around is, like, their best hope of a big-time right-handed bat doing something for them, you know?
I agree. The biggest move at the trade deadline might be another bat and Trey Turner.
Yeah.
Trey Turner.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But it does certainly feel like we have reached the point with Trey.
Yeah, I agree. All right, let's get to the Garcia thing, because we did the pod on Thursday. The news about the injury actually came out like Friday afternoon or Friday during the day or whatever. So we haven't gotten a chance to really talk about it here. It sucks. Obviously, look, I know, a lot of people, Garcia hasn't been great this year and all that, but it did feel like he was finally getting a little momentum offensively, starting to turn it around. Obviously, has been their best defensive player probably this season, period. MJT, I guess, you know what I mean?
Sodder,
yeah, but like, he's been right there. He was playing gold glove outfield. It's a bummer. It sucks for him. And as a part of, like, you know, he just, if nothing else, we talked about how much we love the energy and what he brings from that perspective every day. So sucks for him. Your thoughts on the loss, but also, you know, a team that already had an incredibly light hitting and not deep outfield asked to add some depth, to find new guys. Rincona's called up. We'll talk about that. The Bob Nightingale tweet about Seiya Suzuki and who's the other guy in the tweet? Adele. Yeah. So like the options for trades out there. What do you make of the whole Adolis, you know, now that we know the prognosis, the whole situation?
Yeah. By the way, real quick, there's like a, Seiya and Adele are not moving until July 31st.
Close. No, like, I know. Like, it's just not happening.
People were like, oh, Seiya was scratched. No. The Cubs, I was surprised that they actually did.
Me too. The Cubs are contending. Like, you know.
Yeah. Now, pitching staff's horrendous, but whatever. So, obviously, I feel bad for Adolis. He's on a one-year deal, and I will miss him in right field greatly. Yeah. Just phenomenal right fielder. I don't think the defensive metrics are actually too kind to him, but the eye test.
He jumps off the screen, and we've seen so many throws from him, like whether he got the guy or not, that are just the best outfield throws we've seen in years here, you know?
Yeah. And he was kind of starting to figure it out of the plate a little bit, hopefully. So definitely that sucks for him, 100%. Now they really just got to tread water for a month and a half, and like maybe Rincones can flash, pop, do something. I wish he was hitting better at AAA before they made the call. But I'm also glad they gave him a shot rather than Reyes and Kemp again, even though Reyes only came up once, but whatever. So I wish he was, I guess, performing a little bit better at AAA. He's kind of coming back from the injury. But, you know, I actually think being up here and being around Schwarber, another lefty with pop and his patient, will actually help him in a way. I know the first game of his career is against Mizorowski, so you can't really.
Tough spot. Yeah.
Chalk that up as anything. And then the Derek Hill trade, you know, I think that trade personally is more about the international slot money. and going out and spending it on another player, just like Chan Ming Park a month ago. So I believe it's more about that than Derek Hill. But Derek Hill,
he's a guy.
Just a guy, 780 OPS career against lefties. Did get, two hits over the weekend. And
he's a major league bench player. Like, he's a guy, you know, to bring in. You know,
also,
he's a body.
I'm so in on the – have you seen him he has a toothpick in the outfield?
Oh, dude, you know I love the toothpick guys. I'm fully in on it. Yeah, totally.
So a big, huge fan of that.
There's a vibe with that.
He did make an error out there, which is disappointing because he's supposed to be a great defensive player, but whatever. So I think he is more – I think that's more about Crawford than anything. So I think he's going to obviously play a lot against left-handed pitching. And Crawford, they've kind of put on the shelf against left-handed pitching. The one thing to where the Adolis injury is like, at least it will give them clarity, you know, from the standpoint of needing and making it.
Yeah, we talked about trading for an outfielder even with Garcia healthy that they might have to. Yeah, exactly. Sure.
But the one thing that I could just feel in my bones, I was saying this actually at Tony's place, was like Stottbaum and Adolis are going to have a really strong month and a half. They're going to convince themselves that they don't need another bat. We're fine. And we're going to set the deadline being like, go get a bat. And they're like, yep. No, we're good. We're good. So at least from that standpoint, it's going to force them to go get a bat. Now, all they have to do is really tread water for the next, again, month and a half, and they'll be fine. And again, maybe Rincones can provide something. Maybe he goes off. Maybe he surprises me. Kylie McDaniel had Rincones as their third best prospect, which is
wow, really,
which is not true. But he's like the eighth best prospect in the eighth to tenth. So he's a real player. But I just didn't think he was super super ready, and I wish he was playing a little better at Lehigh Valley, but hey, here's the hoping.
Hey, you know, we didn't have much choice in the matter, you know? All right. Anything else from the weekend before we get to the bag that stuck out to you?
Well, it's kind of all in the bag.
Yeah. All right. Let's do the bag. Let's bag it.
Yeah, it's kind of all in there.
Let's bag it.
All right. So, Painter.
Painter. So, by the way, that stat, I'm not sure you saw it, but the records of starters, the Phillies when the players start, 1-7 during the Painter games. He has been clearly, when he starts, their worst, you know, results pitcher by far.
Yeah. The shame of the Painter outing was, like, he was actually allowing soft contact and, like, kind of, he worked a 12-pitch inning that was good. The swings off the pitches, it wasn't like they were gearing up and blasting balls foul. And the Brewers are a really, really solid offense. I mean, that's not a pushover offense.
No, definitely not.
So, because early, it looked like the things that they've been working on, which is getting him down on the mound, being more downhill, keeping the ball down, fixing his four-seam shape. I mean, he was 99 and like really letting it go and trying to be more explosive, and they weren't squaring him up. It's just like the Bowers. I'm so stuck on Painter because on one hand, I'm like, there was some meaningful changes, and I thought the swings were like not, they weren't smoking him besides the Bowers ball. After it, things changed a little bit. So I'm like, okay, I can give you some leash here. But then on the other hand, I thought he gave up in the outing. Like, I thought that after the home run, he was just like, he looked kind of broken on the mound. And then the next inning, he was 93-95, just clearly upset, bad body language, all that stuff. So on that hand, I'm like, does he need to be sent down for a little bit of a reset? So ultimately, they got to decide which is better for Andrew Painter. Like, if they feel like he's broken, then or not broken, but if they feel like he's really going through it and can't pull his way out of it, then I have no problem sending him down. And people will say they have no one down there. And okay, I mean, it's not like there's Mick Abel from last year. But also, I don't care if Painter's coming up here and doing this. Like, you gotta help him.
A bullpen game would be fine compared to, you know what I mean?
And the one guy that I am intrigued by that is pitching in AAA right now, I'm not doing the Alan Ron Hell thing, although I think he'd be okay, is Chuck King, who we talked about in spring training. He started at Reading for a couple starts, then came out to Lehigh Valley. He's starting. He threw against a pretty good Scranton Wilkes-Barre lineup with like George Lombard in it yesterday, Saturday. He threw five and a third of shutout baseball. He's allowed one earned run in his last three starts, but he's only going like four or five. So, like, now he would have to get added to the 40 man, all that blah, 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 blah. So, like maybe Chuck can come up and be semi interesting. Like, it's a power fastball with pretty good sink and a changeup off of it and a pretty good slider. I don't know. But like, I thought there were some signs of life with Painter, and then I thought there was, oh no, they gotta get him out of there.
Yeah.
So, I don't know which one is right, to be honest with you. But I think they're going to keep giving him every opportunity. That's another one where it kind of feels like we're getting to a breaking point.
Yeah, totally agree. And I do think, yeah, we don't know Painter personally as a person and as a, you know, an athlete, a competitor. I think that's a call they're gonna have to make. Like, what is the best path for him? Cause ultimately, to your point, you know, from a winning games perspective, I don't think you could, you know, doing a bullpen game or what, something like that is going to be that much worse. Like, obviously they lose a lot of the games that Painter starts, obviously, but ultimately, you know, Painter's development matters more than a couple of those games in here. So whatever they think is the best for his development based on who he is and what they have there, I think, you know, that's the route they should go.
Yeah. I mean, there's four pressure points with the Phillies right now. Well, five, actually, if you add in right field, it's Turner, it's Painter. And then there, the last two here, Nola.
I could have seen that one coming.
just four and a third. Boy, yep. Will Aaron Nola pitch into the seventh inning again this year?
No, no. Strictly. They do win games. He starts, ironically, a fair amount. But yeah, it's you know, it's a problem.
Yeah. Oh, it's a problem. You could say that. He is one of the least inspiring pitchers
I've ever seen.
He's so uninspiring.
Yeah.
And then so that's the third pressure point and the fourth pressure point, and this is another thing that I need swapped tonight, is the Brad Keller, Ryan Kirkering swap demotion has to happen. I mean, Kirkering's been great. I mean, just great. Gelb had the stat that he has the lowest average exit velocity against in baseball this year.
No way, really?
Against every pitcher.
That's stunning.
It is stunning, especially after what we watched on Friday.
Yeah, like I'm actually blown away by that. Like, he's obviously been really good, and you know, eye test wise, that stat blows me away.
Yeah, it's great. So, and I'm still skeptical of Kirkering always, and
especially when the playoffs come, we'll have to see how he handles it and all that.
And being in a high leverage spot, like, we've seen him in high leverage spots, and he hasn't always come through. Yeah. But he's earned it; he deserves it. He's pitching with an edge. He's pitching with some gusto, some stones. So I've been really, really. I'm first off happy for Ryan Kirkering.
I think everyone should be. You know, I mean, he's a kid who went through a really tough moment with an entire city, letting down an entire city, a fan base. I'm very impressed with how he's bounced back. Again, you know, he needs to sustain it, but him coming back like this and looking jacked, the best he's ever looked, like, he's never looked this good before, that is it's impressive.
Yeah. And I really just think that what happened in LA could have been the best thing for his career. I mean, got him to lock in physicality wise, get in better shape, allowed him mentality wise to unlock to another level. So, and with Keller, I couldn't believe he's still out there. Now, maybe they're down a couple guys in the bullpen, and he and Mattingly just was like, open a prayer, I guess.
Okay.
Do you think Matt, there wasn't a camera on him? Do you think he has eyes closed for the last? he's just like, come on, please.
Please. Yeah, probably.
I would. I felt like I was sitting there on my porch.
Me too, buddy. Fuming. It was brutal.
Keller, I can't believe he's this. Now, maybe there's still a good bullpen pitcher in there, 100%. But when he came up with the Cubs last year, he started in all these low leverage spots and then worked his way into the high leverage. And he is still learning how to be a high leverage reliever. He was a starter for 7 years at the big league level and just now is transitioning to being a high leverage bullpen guy. So maybe if they swap those roles, have him be the sixth inning guy, seventh inning guy, fifth inning guy, that that it gets him, it gets his feet underneath him, can settle in, and then if he starts pitching better, start working his way back into the high leverage roles. So again, that kind of feels like it's at a breaking point as well. The Turner, I think Turner and Keller are the big ones from the weekend that feel like they've reached a breaking point. And then Painter, we're monitoring, and Nola, we have to just live with.
Yeah, Nola is what it is. But I think the first three, you're right. They're fascinating moves to be made to try and adjust things, adjust the people. It's a great point. I think all those things are top of mind right now for the Phillies.
So that's kind of it for the take bag.
So I actually have one more thing I want to get to you. So good. I'm happy you did this. Real quick, though, shout out to Reapies on the Road. Today's show is sponsored by Miller Lite and Reapies on the Row on 2nd Street. Check out Reapies on the Row for every Phillies game. Enjoy $3 Miller Lite drafts. That's a great deal. Along with their 15-foot LED video wall, Miller Lite fulfills when celebrate responsibly. All right, Jack, I forgot to get this before, and now with the take bag a little light there, I can end with this. But did you see Ken Rosenthal's story that just came out a little bit ago?
I saw the headline. I didn't get to read it.
Okay, well, I just want to throw a couple things at you. You can read the full thing later, but I did find it interesting. Rosenthal was able to reach out by text message to Rob Thompson, get Thompson on the record with some stuff. You know, nice stuff from Topper. He's, you know, watching every game and he can, and still rooting for the team and all that, you know, is bummed he's fired, but he gets it. The real interesting part, I want to read the contrast of two quotes to you. And the Schwarber one is quick, but it feels like, you know, he said, "You feel responsible. I told him I was sorry." Like, I believe that. I believe Kyle felt bad. Here's the Bryce Harper quote. And look, it's not the worst thing ever, whatever, but when you contrast it with Schwarber and contrast with the, you know, just listen to how Harper talked about it and what he brings up and where he goes. It's just a little weird. All right. Here's the Harper quote from the article. "It's usually the hitting coach, to tell you the truth. He's the first one to fall. In a lot of clubhouses across baseball, it usually happens that way. So I'm happy, obviously, that K-Long is still here. He's a very calming voice in this clubhouse, but they made the decision to take out Topper. Obviously, if we would have played well, he'd be sitting in that manager's office right now and we wouldn't even be here talking about it. It's our fault for that happening, but there's nothing we can do about it now. We've just got to move on and play good baseball." He has the "our fault it's happening" line there, which I think is, thank God, because I think without that, it reads very differently. But it does, like, I don't know how you read this and don't say, like, Bryce Harper wanted Kevin Long to stay and didn't really care as much about whether Rob Thompson stayed. That's my take away. Not that he doesn't care about Topper or whatever, but with his comments after when they asked him about it, the Topper thing, and those were weird too. Like, I don't know that Bryce Harper is super upset about Topper being gone. That's at least my read.
Yeah, I can't tell if it's like one of these, he's a 15-year vet or whatever, and he's like,
just very careful with his words. Yeah,
well, and also like, he's like, this is what happens.
Just be honest about it.
Like, I wish there was audio of it, because I could see him being like, I can see him kind of chuckling and being like, mm-hmm. It's usually the hitting coach that goes.
Yeah, you know? It's possible.
Yeah, like obviously being written, it's...
The way, when I read that to you without the intonation from him, it feels weird, right? It's a weird quote to hear.
Yeah, I don't think he's... I don't think he's losing sleep over Rob Thompson not having a shot anymore. But yeah. All right, real quick, minor league minute. Come on, man.
Yes!
Come on, man. So I thought...
Come on, man.
I thought that Gage Wood's start this week for Reading was a wake-up call from the standpoint of, like, overall, he pitched fine. He was good. But it was the third inning. I think it was the Rumble Ponies. Nah, maybe. I forget. Anyway, the...
great name.
They did finally start squaring up the fastball a little bit. Now, it wasn't, like, home runs, but... it was more hard contact than I think we're used to off of the fastball. And he was throwing it in 2-1 counts. He was throwing it in traditional hitters counts, which is not what is pitching anymore. No one actually throws 2-1 fastballs anymore. So I think I think that his off speed was kind of spinning all night. He didn't have a great feel for it. Missed a lot of spots, allowed some base hits on it. He went back to the old well with the fastball, and the fastball finally against double-A hitters did get squared up. All this is fine. This is part of natural
development.
Growth. Yeah. It's just, I think he needs that. Like, he needs that little bit of wake up of, my fastball cannot just eat all the time, especially at the big league level. I need to work on my secondary pitchers, because that is key. So I thought it was a bit of a wake up call, which I don't think is the worst thing in the world. If Painter keeps struggling, I'm going to need to see Gage in AAA.
Oh,
like,
buddy.
Just in case. Just in case. He's at 40 innings pitches now. 40 innings pitched now. I believe his cap is 80. And if he feels fine, then they'll extend it past 80. But I don't think they necessarily want to. But I think they're leaving themselves some room there if they do need to. But I thought it was a wake-up call. Overall, again, he was fine. A lot of strikeouts, a lot of whiffs. But I do think getting that fastball hit around a little bit maybe woke him up and said, okay, let's start honing in on the other pitches.
Yeah, makes sense.
Cato Brumuller is disgusting. And I've talked about the first outing so much to where I was like, no, no, no. Don't be one of these lefties that has no idea where the ball is going. Like, please. He knows where the ball is going. He might end up being a reliever, which is fine. I'm fine leaving him as a starter for now. It's just, I think he could be a upper level type reliever if he wanted to be. He's just, it's such a tough look on left-handed hitters. And he's got a good enough feel for a changeup to where he can get righties out. It's just, he's exactly what we thought. He's mini less explosive Hader and smaller, smaller Andrew Miller. Like,
love it.
That's what he is. And awesome. And right now it goes Gage, Ramon, Marquez, and Obermüller. Like, wow. It's those three. Those are the three prize pitching prospects that we have. And I think Ramon's starting to get on some radars. Ramon was good. He struggled early and then settled in and generated a ton of whiffs on his changeup per usual. I can't wait to see him go up another level because I want to see how hitters adjust to his changeup. It's just he's bullying low A with that. But I think Ramon's starting to get on prospect watch. I'd be shocked if he wasn't a top 100 guy at the end of the year. And then I think the Cade Obermüller hype will start to build now as he is. That's what, three straight great outings by him. Again, it was like three innings, six Ks, back-to-back outings of that, no runs. Maybe one run last time, but it was on a balk. So at least three innings, six Ks, that's a lot of strikeouts.
That is, yeah, dude. I mean, yeah. You get two an inning, that's pretty good.
And then Matthew Fisher, again, another good outing, three innings, five Ks, three shutout innings. So he's still pitching in the FCL. I wonder how long he's there until they just give him some clear water starts. That feels like an August, like last couple weeks of the season, get his feet wet there for next year. He'll be up there. And then Marty Gaire was up to 102. And I think he struck out his last two outings. He struck out six and one in scoreless innings. Wow. So,
buddy.
Three strikeouts, two scoreless.
That's about as good as you could do with that. Yeah.
Up to 102.
Yeah.
So him, so the reliever prospects, like him and Pon are the guys. Pon, I feels like a trade candidate. Well, obviously Alex McFarland's like the baby boy. Mm-hmm. And I would love him to be in the big league soon, but they don't have a spot for him. Who cares? But Pon, Gare, and McFarland are really, really interesting bullpen pieces. Pond's also up to 100. He's in Reading now, continuing his ascension. But the hitting has really slowed down. Like Griffin hit a home run this week, which is good, but he's kind of cooled off. A lot of the guys have kind of cooled off a little bit, but the pitching really feels like it's starting to ramp up to what we thought heading into the year.
Love it.
And then last thing real quick, we'll start to work these into the minor league minutes because we are less than a month from the draft. It's early. It's actually not that early. We've been doing a lot of work on this, but I think my two favorite guys are Archer Horn and Rocco Maniscalco.
Both great names.
Archer Horn's is an unbelievable.
Dude, all-time name.
And then Rocco Maniscalco is a dope name.
Mm-hmm.
I think I like Rocco more. So he,
are they what positions?
Both shortstops.
Okay.
Although Rocco Maniscalco is like an 80 grade defender. Like he is the best defensive shortstop in the class at 17. Like when he's drafted, he's going to be at 17.
Wow.
Which is huge from development. Like Dante Norie was 19 when they drafted him. Mm-hmm. I know it's high schooler, but high school.
Yeah,
like,
no, yeah.
It's changed.
Yeah, it matters. Yeah.
So he's reclassified to this class. He's going to be 17, which you love. He's also 6'2". So he's got a lot of frame.
Yeah, that's cool.
So he's 6'2". He's an 80 grade shortstop. He can stick there. He is a switch hitter, even though he's a little bit better from the left side. but it might end up just ultimately being a left-handed hitter. Who cares? But he is a really, really exciting profile. I'm still, like, on most scouting services, he's kind of down in like the 50s, but I think he's legitimately in play at 36. And then Archer Horn is a Stanford commit, so he's going to be a little harder to sign away. But like, if you dream on him, he's Gunnar Henderson. So you gotta dream on him, but he's got like those two guys, because I need a prep shortstop more than life itself. Are the two right now. As we get close to the draft, there's gonna be a lot of things that change. But if you want to go and start digging in some, grinding some tape, Rocco Maniscalco and Archer Horn are the two guys right now.
Yeah, need a bat. I need bats.
Need six time. Bats.
Yeah. Yes. All right. Again, June 20th, Reading. It's going to be awesome. We'll be back on Thursday after the Marlins series. 2 or 3, we're good with. You know, we're not greedy. 2 or 3. We'll tell you more about it. But again, June 20th, Reading. It's going to be super fun. So get your tickets coming out with us. We'll be back on Thursday after the Marlins series. Until then, he spritz some seltzer.